After the shooting in Las Vegas, there's been a renewed debate over gun control. It's still unclear if Congress will ban semi-automatic to automatic conversion kits, which the Las Vegas shooter used. But the debate over gun control in general has a long history in the U.S. And for a look back, we're joined by Brian Ballow and Nathan Connolly, historians and co-hosts of the weekly podcast Backstory. Guys, welcome back.
Hey, Jeremy.
Hey, Jeremy.
And a lot of this comes down to the Second Amendment. So let's start there. When the founders wrote about the right to bear arms, Justice Ballow, Justice Connolly, what did they mean?
Well, you mentioned me first, so I will deliver my opinion, Jeremy. What they meant was what they said. They were talking in terms of a well-regulated militia. And what they cared about most was protecting this new nation from the number one threat. It wasn't people breaking into homes, and it wasn't terrorists. It was the danger of a tyrannical central government. Right. Now, they had just defeated a tyrannical central government called Great Britain, but they were very worried. Even these makers of the Constitution, especially when they wrote the Bill of Rights, they were very worried about the federal government, a central national government that might threaten the liberty of the states and localities.
Well, it seems that the people who believe that the right to bear arms exists for the same reason today also believe that they could be facing a tyrannical central government.
There was also, though, another threat. Now, I won't dissent from my dear colleague, but I will add an addendum, right, which is
Come on, Nathan. Bring it on.
It's the concern about slave revolts, right? That is a huge piece of the mindset among legislators and concerns about running a democracy in the heart of a slave economy. And the concerns about gun ownership have a lot to do with whether or not slaves will wind up with certain firearms, whether or not slave revolts like the kind that Nat Turner helped to orchestrate in 1831, certainly like the kind that helped to liberate Haiti from French control in the late 18th century. All of that is coloring what becomes what we could argue is an early effort at gun control, where the sense of what it means to be a citizen is largely dictated about who gets to carry firearms and who doesn't.
And what was gun ownership like at that time?
Well, gun ownership was reasonably widespread, but guns themselves were not particularly effective.
Right.
And in fact, you really have to kind of fast forward to the Civil War until guns were mass produced in huge numbers. Mm-hmm. And they were guns that really could be used as aggressive weapons rather than kind of scatter shooting at quail, for instance.
Hmm. Right. And I noticed that the NRA was started in 1871, so right after the Civil War.
It was. And the NRA is basically a kind of early organization for helping people learn how to use guns properly. So they're working on improving marksmanship. There's certainly a concern about whether or not the country is ready to fend off a foreign invader by way of militias that basically know what they're doing with these weapons. But the Civil War
Nathan,
is
I'm going to shock you and tell you that I got up to bar 9 on the marksmanship tally for the NRA. And I was an NRA member. I had to join when I went to summer camp. And it was all about learning how to use a gun.
I got my boater's license. That's about as far as I went on summer camp.
My driver's license. No, it's true. But the other thing, Jeremy, about this period, the 1860s into the 1870s, is you begin to see yet another form of regulation, and that's black codes, which is a state-by-state regulation, again, of recently freed slaves, banning African-Americans from the right to bear arms. And so if you can imagine, removing that weapon from their possession became a critical piece of making sure that they had and maintained their status as second-class citizens. And so the fact that that became a critical piece of what the immediate post-emancipation moment was about meant that once the 14th Amendment was passed, that became a critical piece of what citizenship meant for African-Americans, protecting, again, those rights to bear arms through another constitutional act.
So when did people start talking about gun control, or what laid the foundation for the conversation that goes on now about gun control?
Well, I think there are a couple of precedents to the modern version of gun control. Nathan was right on the money in terms of saying, look, for certain people, primarily African Americans, there was always gun control. Mm-hmm. In 1938, the government passed the first national legislation that actually loosely regulated gun dealers and required very scattershot information on people buying guns and prohibited the sale of guns to people who had committed violent felonies. But in many ways, the story goes back to race, because in 1967, the Black Panthers appeared on the steps of the capital of California, where the legislature was meeting, and they walked into the legislature carrying loaded weapons. They were eventually ushered out, but they were there to protest legislation that would have prohibited these very same Black Panthers who sought to protect citizens that were being harassed by the police. That legislation passed, in essence, to stop Black people carrying guns openly.
Right. And the attempt that they made to make a Second Amendment argument in the late 60s was also steeped in this earlier tradition that we outlined, right, which is about African-American gun ownership to basically remove the possibility of excess violence coming from other corners, be they civilian or from the state. And it's remarkable because this is one of those things, those continuums that connect someone like Ida B. Wells, who argued in the late 19th and early 20th century that the Winchester should have a place of honor in the Black home. Martin Luther King actually applied for a concealed carry permit in 1956 because of the threats against his life and his family. And the Panthers, many of whom were transplants from the Jim Crow South, either from their parents or themselves having migrated, argued again that this was something that they had learned really in the belly of Jim Crow, that the right to be well armed was a critical piece of their citizenship. And by one count, at least, some 90% of African Americans in the South that the Panthers had left behind owned guns of one kind or another. So this was both a political argument, but also an argument about their right to engage in their previous tradition of self-defense.
So let's move to today. I know you're historians, but you can talk about what's going on today as well. Why are we so awash in guns in this nation in 2017?
Well, I think, Jeremy, that there's history involved here, too. And it's the history of the last 20 years or so of this nation being at war. A lot of the guns, I went to a gun show a few years back for backstory, and I was just stunned at the number of guns that were military-style assault weapons. I talked to a guy, I guess I was drawn to the most historically oriented guy at the gun show, but he was selling old, late 19th century weapons, early 20th century weapons, and he'd gone to hundreds of shows. And I asked him how things had changed in the last 15 years. He said, one of the ways they've really changed is the demand for these military-style assault weapon kinds of things. And yeah, we can talk about guns, but I know that if you look at popular culture, especially in a rural area, I live out in the countryside, it's not just guns, they're there, but military-style vehicles and trucks, people wearing camouflage. I think the fact that the nation has been at war for 20 years is a very, very important factor.
That's Brian Ballow and Nathan Connolly, historians and co-hosts of the weekly podcast Backstory. Guys, thanks so much.
Thank you, Jeremy.
Thank you.